Aubrey Masango on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and DStv channel 856.
6 minutes after 10 o'clock, and we enter the third hour of the show. Thank you very much. My understanding, though, is there is an effort to try and make you see yourself and the political context in which you find yourself in, see it differently, to de-religiousize politics in our own minds. And I think that that is a mammoth task that they are going to have to deal with. But it appears that they've started. A number of conversations took place with many, many young people from different political formations and ideologies, I think, over the weekend. And Songe Zozibi is here to come and talk to us, founder of the Rivonia Circle. Songe, good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, Aubrey, and thank you so much for having me.
What do you think of the Janis Walus thing?
Of the Janis Walus thing? No, you know, people say the law is an S. Yeah. You know, if you've heard that term, the law is an S.
Donkey.
Yeah, it's a donkey, right? Yeah. Okay, so the law is a donkey, and I think this is one of those cases where the law is the law, right? But you are unhappy with the outcome anyway. I happen to have been fortunate enough to meet Chris Hani twice.
Yeah,
in 1991. And I think in 1992, or both occasions in 1991, the first was in a sort of smaller public gathering. It was a reception for him in Mtata.
Yeah.
And my late uncle was in the ANC underground. So he took me from rest. It was in 1990, actually. Took me from the hostel, and I went and I saw him. I didn't meet him. I saw him. The second time, he actually came to our home in Mkanduli to see my grandfather. And my grandfather had lost two people that were very close to us in our family. My one uncle had been an MK soldier, killed in 1982 in Lesotho.
Yeah.
My grandmother was just so shaken by the whole thing. She got sick and she just never recovered.
Right.
She died in 1990, long before we voted. So Chris Hani visits our family to console my grandfather about his loss and our family's loss. And he was actually incredibly affable. I remember my mother saying, oh, his hands are so soft for somebody who was in the bush, for 30 years. But he sat there and he had cold meat. We had slaughtered a sheep a few days before.
Yes.
And there was leftover meat. And he sat there and he spent about an hour and a half with my father, my grandfather, just talking to him. Yeah. And so when he was killed, I was really devastated. Yeah. And so we find ourselves in this situation where we've got our constitution, which says we need to do things in a certain way. I've read the judgment. It doesn't make me feel any better.
Sure.
But the law is a donkey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we I guess, have to accept the decisions of the courts. There have been many of these things. I'm much rather, I mean, the Janis Walus parole is a lot more transparent to me, that I can read the judgment. There's an account, it's detailed, there's a logic. I struggle with Eugene de Kock. You know what I mean? Like, he killed so many people and he gets released. He's on money.
Gets a safe house
and that sort of thing. So I ask myself, okay, you know, Chris Hani was a hero to some of us. But you know, Janis Walus killed him. There is a Bekim Lang in his family. I know they've forgiven de Kock. He went out of his way to apologize and so on, right? But man, why is society safer with Eugene de Kock, with a mass murderer out,
indeed,
than it is with somebody who did a targeted killing?
Indeed.
I'm like, okay, so guys, what are you doing? Just be consistent here. Why are you releasing the one guy and this guy must stay in jail? But there is no, we don't understand. I mean, if the issue is he hasn't said everything, well, the judgment says, well, there's nothing here that says as long as the minister feels you didn't say everything, then you can't. Unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that. You know, there has to be a reason. So I'm devastated by it. But I also know that we are a country of laws. We are going to get judgments we like and judgments we don't like. And I'm not one of these people who's going to say we must hang Chief Justice Zondo and the judges of the Constitutional Court. They're doing a job as written by the politicians, by the way.
Yes.
And now the same politicians are marching.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, SACP, would you please also march up at De Kock too? I'm not saying don't march against Wallows, but let's be consistent here.
Yes.
No, anyway,
I hear you. You know, and the conversation is not so much about Chris Hani and that issue, but you're a learned man. There's a Shakespearean play.
Mm.
I can't remember which one, but there's a quote somewhere in one of those plays by William Shakespeare that says he doth protest too much.
Too much.
Yeah. I'm going to leave it there.
Let's leave it there.
0118830702. My guest is Songhe Zozibi, founder of the Rivonia Circle. So a number of conversations have taken place over the weekend. I saw the Kathrada Foundation, youth coming there, or youth that were invited by the Kathrada Foundation. But you've been talking to many different youth groups. And the thing about this particular conference is that it happened in multiple venues at the same time in South Africa, talking about what?
So, Obs, thanks once again for having me. Before we get there, let me say we've had close on 40 conversations in communities across South Africa through a program we call the Democracy Builder. And the first question that gets asked in those engagements, and they last for up to 7 hours, so it's a very long period of listening. We've done focus groups, we've done surveys, we've done community meetings, and so on. All we've spoken to thousands of people, Aubrey, let me put it like that.
Right.
And we have got to understand why people are so disconnected from politics as it is covered by the media.
Yeah.
And how do we know that? We know that, Aubrey, because out of South Africa's 40 million eligible voters, only 28 million of them don't vote. They didn't vote last year. And that number just keeps growing, the number of people who aren't voting. So that means only 30% of South Africans participated in the local government elections last year. You got to ask yourself, why? Right? You know, the ANC's whatever percentage or the DA's isn't the real percentage, right? So we've had an opportunity to engage with people about politics without the party hat. And it's very important to us because we're not trying to recruit them. We're not trying to, you know, they don't need to join anything. They just sign a register when they come in, but that's about it, right? We've had ANC councillors in our meetings. We've had all sorts of, in fact, in Port Elizabeth, we were invited by an ANC councillor to come. And so we've developed this understanding from all of these engagements of what people really want out of politics, right? What they don't want out of politics, and what they expect politics to be about. So this culminated in a large workshop, 160 people in Bramfontein on the 8th of August, called Mobilizing People's Electoral Power. We have Nse Ufo from the New Georgia Project in the US. They've mobilized millions of people to register to vote in Georgia and so on. And that's resulted in a profound political shift in Georgia, where the Democrats were able to win both Senate seats and that sort of
thing. Which is historical for Georgia.
It's historical for Georgia.
I mean, Georgia is the Fentersdorp of the United States.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, it's in the South. That's a proper South over there. Right.
Yeah.
So she was here. She inspired a lot of people about grassroots organizing, about how the people, the electorate, needs to have an agenda. When you pick Aubrey to run for office, Aubrey doesn't get to run without the approval of the community, because Aubrey is carrying the community's agenda.
Yeah, but lots of politicians in this country would say, but that's exactly what it is.
No, they don't. They don't do it. Aubrey, you know, the interesting thing about the way we do our political engagement, we do very little talking, we facilitate. We facilitate.
Right.
Because what you want to do is you want to listen.
Right.
So I remember in Port Elizabeth when we had another engagement at Nelson Mandela University, I got to speak once. And then eventually I had to go and catch a plane several hours later. I hadn't got a chance to speak because the rule is, this is not a Q&A. We're not here to explain. We're here for a political engagement. You tell us what the meaning of politics is, what you want out of politics, and so on. And
that was the mandate. That was the question that
that's
attendees
where
were being asked.
Yeah.
What do you understand by politics? What do you want to get out of the political process?
Yes.
Is that what the conversation was generally about?
That's what the conversations are generally about. So let me give you an example. So last Monday, I was in East London. in another community meeting. Do you know what we've spent almost half the time talking about, Aubrey? It was teenage pregnancies, the pregnancies of preteen children, basically child pregnancies. Right. It was the social problem, the impact of those on those kids, the trauma, the sickness from cervical cancer, they're more susceptible to cervical cancer, the burden that gogos have looking after these children because the support mechanisms in our communities are no longer the same and that sort of thing. Aubrey, when people speak about these things, you can tell it's very visceral. And for us, Aubrey, that's a political conversation. What is the use of politics if it's not about those issues? Because those are problems that need to be solved. But does it sound like a political conversation to you? It sounds like a social worker conversation.
Exactly.
But why? It is a political conversation because it is the role of politics to understand what social infrastructure is.
Let me ask this question this way. Because indeed, I know that there would be people that would say, but that's not a political conversation. That is an issue that speaks of social realities in a particular area, in a particular situation. What would be the political conversation according to those that would say that that is not a political conversation?
Well, lately, it's about whether Paul Mashatile wants to be president or not. It is about whether who's more corrupt between Cyril and whoever is supported by the RET faction. That's the obsession of the media, right? It's the step aside rule. It is, name it, right? Aubrey, for those people in that conversation, there was that conversation. There were lots of young people, including ANC Youth League members, who were complaining that they're not getting support as budding entrepreneurs in Ginsberg and King Williamstown and so on, right? Aubrey, that's very important to those guys. It's existential. People shout when they speak. The veins stick out of their necks because these issues are sitting on their necks, right?
I was saying the other day that the political reality of South Africa has been hijacked by big man stories, by the egotistical whims of the conversation that is carried by that fashionable nonsense that we attach to what we call politics. That's why I don't speak much to politicians on this show. Somebody else said to me, but I notice you don't speak much to politicians. So I said, to say what to them?
Yeah.
To talk about what with them? Because they don't offer any legislative changes or policy changes that are going to change the lives materially of the people that they are supposed to represent. If I'm speaking to somebody in the ANC, as you said, it becomes a conversation about Zweli Mkhize and Ramaphosa and whether who's less corrupt.
Between the two of them.
That's the conversation. If I'm talking to the guys in the EFF, then it's a conversation about whether or not the EFF was involved in VBS. We're not talking about the policy issues that could be broken.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What happened to the land issue?
Precisely.
That we've spent the last 3 years arguing about, right?
Precisely.
So now that the thing has, the gimmick lasted long enough for certain people to sound radical and so on, guess what, Aubrey? In our villages in the former Transkei where I'm from, there is still a landlessness problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the landlessness issue is real.
Yeah.
But now if you position this whole problem as you're going to take land from white people, okay, that might be useful for people who have proximity to white people.
Yeah.
But we don't have white people down there. And people still don't have land.
Yeah.
So you're not genuine in what you're wanting to do because you're not listening to me. So think about it. So now you talk about Cyril versus Zweli, Palapala versus Digital Vibes, and then it's expropriation without compensation, white people this, white people that, right? I'm sitting there, Aubrey. I've got a social issue that such as what I was talking about, which should be at the center of politics for communities like that. There are young people who can't find jobs. They are trying to hustle and start businesses and they need support and help. You're not talking about that. Aubrey, why should I pay attention to who's more corrupt between Cyril and Zweli?
And then we say young people are apathetic.
Are apathetic.
And actually young people are telling you that the stuff that you're talking about is nonsense.
Yes.
And then we have conversations that say the ANC is going to lose 47, or is going to be under 50% of the vote. But we're not saying 50% of the 30% that is going to vote. So ultimately we are in a dictatorship by a minority in South Africa.
This is where we are. And so, Aubrey, all we've done, we've said, take democracy back to its basics and have real issues in people's lives being at the center of politics. That's basically all we're doing, to say, you see, that thing that you're talking about, child pregnancy, that thing is at the center of politics. Aubrey, we had, in my estimation, over 600 people participating nationally this last weekend. Do you know how many times foreigners came up? Zero. We didn't choose the topics.
Sure.
So people say they want a political movement, and we ask, what should the political movement be about? Aubrey, they talk about the real issues in their lives. They talk about work. They talk about training opportunities that came up lots and lots and lots of times. That they talk about crime, right, feeling safe in their communities, etc., etc., etc. The thing, there is a devil that's happened, and that is the ubiquity of electronic media in general, with the social media ecosystem. The things that
amplify people, certain that, topics,
yes,
more than they actually are on the ground.
And of course, what happens, and I was a news person myself, news organizations tell stories via the lens of social media, Twitter in particular, which is the smallest of all the social media platforms in South Africa, right? And so what the vein we have struck, Aubrey, is this. We are going to make politics about the issues that are important in your life. So you'll notice when I speak about families a lot, whatever the structure of family is, whether it's single parent family, same sex, whatever, the struggles that families go through to look after their kids, to make sure that they're safe. Aubrey, we care about what working families think about when they're at work and they don't know where their children are. Because those are the things that people worry about, because then they start thinking about social infrastructure, sporting facilities, drugs, and this kind of thing. That is what politicians should be worrying about.
I want to invite our listeners to be part of this conversation on 011-883-0702. But indulge me if you will. I want to talk to those of you who didn't vote. And I want to understand why you didn't vote. And I also want to understand from those who voted or who didn't vote, it doesn't really matter now, but what were the issues that you wish the politicians would have been speaking about in your area? And I imagine, Songezo, that in different parts of South Africa, there are different priority issues. So I imagine that the people here in Joburg would probably be interested in how we're going to deal with the electricity situation and the looming water crisis and the potholes, I suppose, here in Johannesburg. And in other areas, that they'd be worried about the issues that you've spoken about, the child pregnancy issues and how that impacts entrepreneurship and so forth and so forth. Do you find that there is an overlapping of issues sometimes?
Oh yes. Yeah? So issues distill themselves.
Yeah.
The top five consistently, people just experience them differently. Number one is jobs, job stroke economy. Two is crime and safety. People are feeling unsafe. Number three, of course, is corruption consistently. And by the way, it's not even that people, although some people in their contributions here were saying Zuma should be on SASSA also. So people said, no, he should receive a social grant like the rest of us. Yeah. Anyway, but corruption is the third. And they experience it at a local level.
Yeah.
So the people will say, if it's a rural area, if I go to the chief wanting help to secure an ID because there might be expanded public works program opportunities, I might not get that letter vouching for me to say I'm from this village because the chief wants to, or the councillor or the chief, whatever the case is, wants to give opportunities only to people that he or she likes.
Right.
And so that oppresses me. I don't have a job as a result. I don't have opportunities. If I go and apply for a contract or a tender, I'm never going to get it unless I pay a bribe.
Right.
It's this corruption that is sitting on people's necks. So that's number three. Number four is load shedding. Sorry, is cost of living.
Yeah.
Cost of living,
Aubrey. Yeah.
Number five, and it's not interest rates, but people don't have cars or bonds or that sort of thing. I watch this obsession with the Reserve Bank and the interest rate.
Yes.
A tiny percentage of us actually have a bond. The rest of South Africans don't.
I always say to people that listen to my show that careful that you don't superimpose the conversation that we have here on 702 with our existential socioeconomic realities.
Yes.
And superimpose it to the rest of South Africa. We may represent a very, very tiny...
Tiny
LSM, yeah?
Yeah.
If we can speak in those terms. So whatever it is that you hear, when you hear people saying, oh, we must vote out the ANC, whatever the case may be, careful that you may just be speaking to a very small group of people who have the agency, who have the wherewithal, who have the whatevers that may articulate that particular voice. But then what happens at the elections? We find that a lot of people are still going to vote for the ANC. I know that you've checked some polls. You've done some polls that say something else. But I suppose what I was trying to make as a point of principle is that careful how you amplify your conversations to the greater reality.
Yeah, don't project your perceptions on the rest of the population.
So it's something that we need
to
be careful about. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So cost of living.
Yeah.
And you know, for most people, the cost of living issue is related to, they express it with cooking oil. They can't afford cooking oil anymore.
Right.
Okay, you and I will complain about our bonds. Yes, that's important, right? But the point is, what would we rather have? So would we rather have our credit cards cost more and that sort of thing? Or would we rather have cooking oil and other foodstuffs cost more? Because that's what inflation does, right? So when you have these conversations with people, they get to understand the trade-offs and that kind of thing. You're not saying one way or another. But those are the top five priorities. There is no education, there is no health, there's no housing. Not because they're not important, they really are. But out of these five issues, Aubrey, that I've given here on air, is there anyone that you think shouldn't be in the top five?
Sure.
Right? That tells you we've got so many problems that the top five isn't enough. You actually really have to go to a top 10.
But I imagine that top five has got domino effects. In other words, you didn't mention the grey listing in that top five.
Yeah.
It's important to me.
Yeah.
It's important maybe to the people that are talking to. But if people don't have jobs, if people don't have a sense that they are safe, if people don't feel that corruption is being dealt with, perhaps the grey listing story is connected somehow to these top five?
Well, not yet, right? Okay. But to corruption, yes.
Yes.
To corruption, yes, because it's basically our inability, corruption and crime. It's our inability to fight corruption and crime that we're going to get grey listed.
Right.
But the point I'm making, Oprah, is so everybody talks about jobs, right? And everybody, and the jobs never get delivered. Right, the economy is still not growing, so the jobs don't get delivered.
Or they talk about job opportunities, jobs.
Yeah, and number two is crime. I mean, okay, we've had police commissioners getting arrested now consecutively since George Fivers, right? So we're not doing very well on that score either. So that's the second thing. And cops get arrested all over if it does happen. So that's number two. So people don't believe that story either. Number three is corruption. They don't believe that anything is going to be done because people don't get arrested.
Sure.
That's number three. Number four is cost of living. And when these politicians talk about cost of living, they talk about mortgages.
10,000 rands for medical aid.
Yeah, in Mkanduli, I don't have a mortgage, basically, because also, there aren't even RDP houses there,
sure.
So you don't even get that. So now we're at number four now.
Yeah.
Right. And number five is load shedding. Well, the lights continue to go off. So, Aubrey, why would you listen to a politician promising to solve any of these? None of them are getting better.
Perhaps this is another question that I would like to ask you as you listen to this conversation between myself and Songhe Zozi. How relevant are politicians to you? All of them. Give me a call. I mean, how much do you actually trust them? Given what Songhezo has just said, And I'm powerfully aware of the fact that he was speaking to certain communities, perhaps in Kanduli and so forth, and you are not from Kanduli. I get it. But I gather that the principle is still the same. How much of what they say do you actually believe? And to what extent do you get involved in the political process as defined by electoral law at this stage because you feel, well, there's nothing else, so I might as well just get involved because I don't want to suffer the reality of complaining without complying, you know?
Yeah.
I get the sense of that a lot. I feel like that sometimes. Every time I go and stand in a queue and I'm voting, I'm always overwhelmed by the feeling that says, is this all?
What's the point? Yeah.
Is this all we've got? And did that come up?
So that comes up a lot because people just feel like, you know, we vote, but what do we get out of it? So let me give that number. It's not even a survey. So in Mthatha, where I'm from, there was a by-election recently. The ANC got 73-74%. The problem is the turnout in the most populous voting district there was 3%.
Mm.
As my colleague Lukhona at Rivonia Circle says, if 10 people were to vote in South Africa and 8 voted for Freedom Front Plus, they would say the Freedom Front Plus got 80%.
And they wouldn't be wrong.
And they wouldn't be wrong because it depends who bothers to pitch up. So, Aubrey, where all of this got to as it relates to Saturday?
Wait. Okay. I just want to drive that point home because I think it's so important. So a friend of mine, whenever we talk about cars, because we like to talk about cars, likes to say, you know, I drive a BMW 325i. And he says it like that.
Yeah.
I drive a BMW 325i. Now, his BMW 325i is 30 years old.
It's still a 325i.
It's broken.
It's still a 325i.
It is broken. But it's still a 325i.
Yeah.
So that's probably what you're saying to me, that if 10 people were to vote out of 60 million South Africans, we would still statistically be speaking of eight voted for the Freedom Front Plus. We would still be saying that 80% of the people.
Yes,
vote. That's a very deceptive reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you say, no, people keep voting for the ANC. No, they're not. They've long switched out. They're just not voting for anybody else. So how does all of this relate to Saturday? That's the bottom line. So we've been having these conversations. And each time people say, because our work culminates generally in a community project, which the people have to complete within a few weeks, at least the Democracy Builder program, right? But there's a mini NDP that people do on their own. So this is a facilitated process because you also want integrated solutions. You don't want to create one, solve one problem, and you leave the other four that relate to it unresolved and so on. And then the people go ahead and they do it themselves. And we've got an 80% plus completion rate. We're not there. So we go to a community, we spend this great session or 2 days or 3 days, whatever the case is, and we move on. The people remain. Mostly it's young people. Actually, there's a lot of older folks who come and participate. They complete the projects. We don't have money to give them. We're a non-profit. I spend half of my time looking for money, right? They do it themselves. Now we think, okay, so out of this political conversation, because it was centered on the issues that matter to people and it was solutions focused, Aubrey, there is no time in those conversations to complain about the ANC. Ne? The last time they do it, ANC or DA, is when they talk about what does politics mean to you? Then people say corruption, lies, and all of these kind of things, right? That's the last time. For the rest, it's solutions. We ask them to imagine South Africa 2.0, which is an upgraded South Africa. Just let your imagination run wild. What would you like to have in your community?
And do you, as a, and we've got lots of calls. I want to take some of these calls. But do you, because something that bothers me specifically, Songezo, is this constant reference to apartheid in our response to why certain things aren't the way that they are. So you'll be familiar with this. Yeah, but the apartheid guys ate too. But the apartheid guys also were corrupt. And I'm hoping that in those conversations, the South Africa Reimagined 2.0 isn't using that diabolical system as a reference point, because that's why we said this thing was bad to begin with, right? But I keep hearing from politicians and apologists for politicians, their response is always, yeah, but these guys also did it.
No, Aubrey, people...
But you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Right? Yeah, okay.
These things don't come up. You got such high-quality conversations wherever we go, because finally people get an opportunity to talk about real issues, and they are forward-looking. They want solutions, not promises.
Right.
And so one of the things people say to us is, unless they're going to say exactly how the problem is going to be solved, I'm not interested. Coming here and saying you're going to build me a house doesn't excite me. That, I've been told that for 30 years. It still hasn't happened. So please, like, please don't because you've got a different T-shirt, now you come and you tell me you're going to build a house.
And very often politicians think when people come to their rallies where they're given a Streetwise 2 and a T-shirt, that is indicative of the support that they have. I would also go and get... In fact, I have said it to my listeners. Born, every time these guys come and they've got a rally, go and fetch the T-shirt.
That's what people do, by
the
way.
Go and fetch the T-shirt.
Yeah, they do, and they
go and eat the meat, enjoy. And then if there's another rally down the street with another political party, go there too. Go and fetch Skaftin, feed your children, take the T-shirt. I always say that to my listeners because, yeah, that's how I feel about it. I want to take a few calls.
Sure.
Yeah? And then I want to talk about what transpired this week.
Yes,
And I think it's important for us to underscore, to emphasize the fact that this is an attempt to try and awaken a different consciousness towards politics.
Exactly.
I keep calling it the de-religiousization of politics. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, says, which party do you vote for? I said, the one that I feel like on any given moment. And I've got all the T-shirts of all of the different political parties. I use them for other things too. But let me take a call from Mama TD in Meerdale. Hi, Mama TD.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yeah, go for it, Mama TD. What's on your mind?
I'm a supporter number one for Sonia. So heads up for this bride boy of mine. I'm 73 years old.
Yes.
I stopped voting, I think, 2 years ago because for me, it's not doing anything. Except that we are having the fat cats that are lining their pockets. I've got 9 grandchildren that I'm worried about. I'm very active at my age. And I feel like we are lost here. And the country is going down and down and down. It's actually disappointing, and we are sad that this is happening in front of us. With all the monies that are going, I'm a retired nurse.
Yeah.
My sadness was hearing about Ekurhuleni at Tembisa Hospital. And being an ICU nurse, retired ICU nurse, worked in ICU for 25 years during my time, I feel sad that these hospitals are worse. And that's where we used to work better with our patients.
Mama Zidi, I want to ask you this question before I let you go. So what does Songezo and his movement mean to you?
It means a lot, because I think I can raise my hand and say, Songezo, I'm going to help you to mobilize 60 plus retired nurses and people who understand what you are talking about. It's not all about young people. We need to be part of you guys, because maybe our days are numbered, but we are still active and our votes still count.
Mama TD, I'm going to let you go. Thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated. And I really, really appreciate you making the time to give us a call. Mama TD in Meerdale. Thabang is in Pretoria. Hi, Thabang.
Hi.
Yeah, go for it.
Thanks for me. Okay, my point, quick one, that I just want to put on your slide there. Again, for vote, locally, but a vote at national. And the sole reason for that is that people died, you know, during apartheid, they were not allowed to do that. So for me to protect that, I thought they never had to do that. But unfortunately, the problem that we have a misrepresentation of people that want to speak in the different institutions, like left and right wing, always getting away. Why I'm saying that, I'll give you just basic example, right? You find a way that now, if there's a simple rule that says if you can learn help, you can't control it, right? And now, well, it aims for corruption, drugs, human trafficking. It's always the basic, simple thing like illegal immigration. But in fellow Africans, when you speak about that, it's like you're xenophobic. For instance, let's turn the tables around and let's talk about Chinese, right? There's a lot of sectors that have been run by Chinese people and exploiting our people from different countries in Africa. Actually, a basic example, from Zimbabwe and Malawi, right? They're not paying them, obviously, and they're not applying to any more citizens, right? So my problem is when you speak about that, you find leaders like Julius Malema, right, who will then force integration where people don't comply. And how is that impacting us? People will go and grab the land illegally, and they'll now establish this illegal recycling, and Chinese will benefit from that. But these are politics that are attacking us on the ground, you know. And fundraiser and institutions like this, this is where when we voice our things like this, we should always represent our voice because it's more or less like it should not matter. So why didn't vote locally? It's like for the past, you know, 10 years, I felt like we don't have a revolutionary leader like Chris Hani, like you were saying. I also got a chance to meet him, fortunately. But, you know, from the likes of when Mandela was the president, he said to us, he knew what was coming. Education is the key to success. Thabo Mbeki came with a triple D scheme, which was working to benefit, you know, the black elite that were in power. But now, when Zuma came with radical economical change,
yeah,
which means that a few people were benefiting from that, but it didn't have the numbers. Now, the problem is, we don't have a person that has that evolution. So why I didn't vote, just to summarize this, is if I'm fighting with my brother, which is ANC and EFF, if now someone is going to go into alliance for a land policy just to be spiteful that, you know, a white man must benefit from that, then it's the same. This is the people who died for the struggle.
Come on. I've got to stop you there. Sorry, I've lost the tabak there. AB from Alex. Hi, AB.
Oh, Aubrey.
Yeah, good evening to you, AB.
Lovely topic.
Thank you, sir.
But I just want to put one thing in there. But why are they lying to us? The politicians are all liars. You know, Ramaphosa was here in 2017. He said he's going to build about 1 million houses.
I remember that.
One brick. 1 million houses, but I never see one brick. It's 2022. They're all liars, man. How can we vote for this?
So here's the thing, AB, that I'm hoping that is going to be the takeaway from this conversation. Because we can have a whole hour. In fact, we can have 4 or 5 hours talking about how bad these politicians are. And we really can. My question is, who do we need to become as a citizenry, as a citizens of South Africa? Who do we need to become politically in order for us to be protected from political lies?
You know, the people that had to come to the ground for the social problems we're facing here. Our kids are smoking bad things here. They are not working. No one cares about them.
I hear you.
Even the government. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
You know, some of say something very important. You know, starvation in the location here in Alex. It's shocking.
AB in Alex. Koko Lindy, you in Centurion. Koko. Yebo, Koko.
You have just shunted me, what I'm saying, and I'm still alive. I turned 80.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful, Koko. That's wonderful, man. That's wonderful. Tell me, what are your thoughts, Koko?
You know what? We still are the same people that you know as from those years that today is the 28th year. You shut us down. You know, we're not open. We are still standing and saying, our kids were singing Umkhuzulu. Everyone of us in Africa have a good view. Not democracy. We have never thought about democracy. I don't have a corner. In 76, Aubrey. Did they talk about democracy? Mm. It's the truth. No.
Interesting. Gogo, let me get Songezo back into the conversation. We wanted freedom, not democracy, says Gogo. I've had these conversations with her. I'm worried, though, Songezo, that we could fall into the trap that I hope we don't fall into this evening of politician bashing.
And
I suppose it has its place. But I get the sense that what you guys are trying to do at Rivonia Circle is to inject a way of thinking,
yeah,
a particular approach to politics, our responsibility to ourselves in that context, and who we need to become in order for us not to, in 10 years' time, still be having the same conversation about how bad politicians are.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And this is where last Saturday comes in. So the conversation was about a people's manifesto. The idea being that in a democracy, there's a Xhosa word called umthunywa. It's a representative. It's your MP.
Right.
Ukuthuma is to send someone to do something. We have a perverse situation here where umthunywa, the political parties, come and tell people what they should send them to do.
Right.
Can you, do you realize how perverted that is? Okay. So in our ethos, this works going to work differently. The reason people need to have a political program is so that when you have a people's manifesto, when they talk about something that's not interesting, that's not important in people's life, they say, no. Actually, keep your manifesto in your pocket. We've got our own here.
Yeah.
These are the things that are important in this country. This is what we want you to do.
Right.
You go and you do it within the constitution, but these are the priorities. All of these kind of things that you, these gimmicks that you come here and you talk about, no. So the people's manifesto is a really important aspect of it. So, by the way, people overwhelmingly said they want a people's movement to fight elections in 2024. Said, okay, you can't get around as 600 people and say you're starting a movement. You need to go and convince more people to subscribe to this kind of politics. And then we come back here and we have another conversation that people are like, sure. Okay, so I said 10,000 people. No, that's not big enough. The number ended up being 1 million people. They believe they can go out. Aubrey, our form is not out yet to sign people out. We're getting forms drawn by...
Are you guys trying to create a political formation?
So I'll come to that. So the point is, Aubrey, what you have right now is people saying to your politician bashing thing. So what the pledge... So we said there must be a pledge to one another, and that's what was adopted. One, you want to focus on solutions whether there is an election or not.
Right.
If you're going to be a movement, that movement is about solving things in every community every day, basically.
Right.
Because that's what politics and political activity must be about fundamentally. So that's the first thing. The second thing is it's really great that as 600 people, you think that we can have a movement because everybody can call themselves a movement. This needs to have genuine mass credentials. But before we get there, go out and build that movement. And when it exists, then you talk about an election, basically. And the people are committed to that because it's on the basis of this new politics, which is what are the issues in your community? What is urgent? What can we solve later? What do we need to do now? What can we do as a community? What does the state which belongs to us need to do in the short and medium term to resolve these issues? Because that's how you change the political agenda from the things that politicians, professional politicians talk about to a people-driven agenda, basically. So the task ahead is massive.
But aren't you going to run into an inevitable regionalism? In other words, as you said, Mkanduli, these are the issues. In Mafikeng, those are the issues. Are you not going to have a situation where you're going to have, because of the genuine, authentic needs of a particular community, that you have a regionalism?
No, not at all, Aubrey. Yeah? So let me tell you. So jobs are not a regional issue, right? Crime is not a regional issue.
Right.
Cost of living is not a regional issue. Corruption is not a regional issue. Everybody shares the same experiences. I had that concern too, by the way,
yeah,
that, oh my goodness, we're going to end up with like 14,035 priorities because everybody's priority is a number one priority. No, South Africans generally suffer from the same pain. You know, what Gogo was saying here about her grandchildren and so on is true. That's what people talk about. That example from East London. She doesn't live in East London. She lives here. Mm. The issues are the same. So we're not nervous about distilling issues into clear priorities. That People's Manifesto is going to happen. And fortunately, Aubrey, in our work that we do, and hopefully, look, we're going to have a campaign now rather than a movement, because there is no movement yet. We're going to have the RISE campaign, which, as the one of the callers was saying, put up your hand, volunteer to serve in your community, and say what kind of change you need in the country. And find not just you, but other people that you believe have the capability and the integrity to solve the problems of this country.
But ultimately, we have to vote in 2024.
No, of course. Yeah.
Who do we vote for?
So my, in closing, my injunction to the people that are there is that you're going out to find leaders. You're going to find leaders. And leaders are not people that are presented to you. You know people that you already work with. A leader is somebody who takes responsibility and is willing to motivate and mobilize others to provide solutions wherever they are. When somebody in a family starts resolving the problems of the community, we don't call them a leader. But somebody who's brought T-shirts and things have said, I want to get elected, we call them my leader. It doesn't quite work. This is the new political consciousness that we're talking about. And I said, it's unconscionable that you guys who've taken all day on a Saturday, left your families to come here because you care about your communities in South Africa, you walk out of here and you say we don't have leaders. When you've taken the trouble, there are people who couldn't be bothered to be there, who couldn't be bothered to have the conversation. They are busy talking about the step-aside rule. Aubrey, we were looking at the screen now in studio. Yep. Paul Mashatile went on and on about the step-aside rule.
Yeah.
What? In a country where people are starving. Like we were hearing from Alex, we're going to spend headline news, first news item, step-aside rule.
So, are you optimistic that South Africans in their different communities, united by very similar needs that you've distilled into five priorities at this stage, are beginning to awaken to this consciousness?
Yeah.
And do you think, see this new consciousness playing out in the various political formations that already exist? Because I don't know whether you are looking for the decampaigning of a particular political party. I would be happy to see people within the ANC starting to have different conversations other than the state.
This is beautiful. Yeah? In Rustenburg, we had two ANC councillors
when
we had a session there.
Right.
In Port Elizabeth, we were invited by an ANC councillor to come. We had somebody from Action SA last Saturday. You have to be in the room to get how electric it gets, because for the first time, people feel like we as ordinary people get to do the talking. We get to set the agenda. We get to get listened to. Nobody's going to sit on a stage with that table and that party tablecloth with a microphone and address us about our problems when they have not listened to us. And the things they promise are at number 8 on our list, not in the top 5.
Where to for the Rivonia Circle and your initiatives?
So basically, Rivonia, we're going to now start the RISE campaign. The RISE campaign is going to be a standalone thing. Basically, it's that mobilizing of 1 million people. Basically, you say, if you want a movement, let's prove it. It's got an ethos. We need to highlight issues, build a people's manifesto, and so on. Then we can say we've got a movement. Right now, we've got a campaign. The Rivonia Circle will continue to play the role that it does, having conversations, working on public policy propositions, which is the work that we're about to start doing now, doing research and so on. It was never built to be a movement. It was built to play that kind of role. Out of the work that we've initiated, this visceral sense of wanting to change the political conversation has come through. And therefore, I know it's 11 o'clock. I'll leave you with contact details for those who want to. We've got a WhatsApp number, 072-400-7503. 072-400-7503. Email rise@risemzansi.org.
Give it to me again.
Rise@risemzansi.org.